Is that dramatic enough for you? That's the ride of the Valkyries. And we're rebooting the news today, everybody. And I'm Dave Weiner here with Jay Rosen.
Hi, Dave. Welcome back to Rebooting the News, everybody.
Thank you for welcoming us all back. And I am relieved. That's how you spell my name, R-E-L-I-E-V. I don't even think I spelled that right.
You're relieved? Why are you relieved?
I'm relieved because my server is running.
Oh, right.
You're
supposed to know about servers, Dave. I don't know if you know that.
And you know, this is something that should give you a lot of confidence, that if somebody like, either I am a charlatan or this shit doesn't work. I think it's more of the latter than the former. In my humble opinion.
It would be like me waking up one day and all of a sudden I can't make any more clever distinctions. Like, it just doesn't work. You know, the capacity is gone.
Is that what it says on your job description?
Well, I don't know. I don't have any technical skills, so I'm trying to think of something that I can throw in.
Well, it's important to really nail this down, what it takes to be a professor at a famous university.
Being able to make distinctions is very important.
There you go. So...
so we're going to be rebooting the news today about a few items that really stirred my imagination and I know can start to get you hopping mad.
Well, I'd like to sell you a bridge. I've got this really great bridge. It's like you could actually have your choice of three of them.
Uh-huh.
There's the Brooklyn Bridge, the Manhattan Bridge, and the Williamsburg Bridge. They all basically do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Really good deal. Anyway, so what would
That's
you like?
That's kind of an inside joke.
Okay. Well, let's share the joke with everybody.
Right. So last week, an interesting little item appeared that I sent out over my Twitter feed in the Bits blog at the New York Times. And it was headlined, BetaWorks and the Times Plan a Social News Service. And I'm just going to read you the first paragraph. Something is stirring deep within the technology incubator BetaWorks. A personalized news service called news.me that is being developed in collaboration with the New York Times. So, Dave, I'm sure, knows a lot about BetaWorks. And I just thought this was an interesting little announcement, primarily because of another thing that was revealed in it, which said that the way this thing came about is that it started with the Times developers who sort of came up with something that sort of interested them. And then they kind of handed it off to BetaWorks to develop it. And now it's coming to fruition. And I had never heard of that particular pattern before in a news company, where their own geeks come up with something, they sort of farm it out to a technology company, and then get it back as a tool that they can use. So when I sent this link around to my Twitter feed, I said the New York Times is becoming a technology company, because that pattern of development is one I just hadn't seen before. Now, who knows whether this tool, when it emerges, this social news service, as they call it, which is yet another attempt to personalize news, something we've talked about before in this show, Dave, including when we discussed your idea of checkbox news, which I continue to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows if this is going to be any good? I just thought the way that it came about was instructive. Now, what did you think when you saw this little item?
Well, I saw something completely different, but it also appropriate for the show. It was written by a New York Times reporter quoting an executive from the New York Times,
yes,
who refused to comment about a project of the New York Times. See, the incest is starting to build here.
Mm-hmm.
About a company that they had invested in.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the while, the pretense is that she doesn't know what the project is.
Which, well, maybe she doesn't.
Maybe she does, maybe she doesn't. But it's just, and then, of course, they said absolutely nothing about the product. And if you go to the page, in other words, there wasn't actually any news in the article.
No.
And if you go to the website, you just see a placeholder.
Right.
Which, for all we know, they put in place because they knew the article was coming. Also, I thought it was a horribly conflicted example of non-news that really should have been left out. I mean, there really wasn't a story there.
In other words, they should have waited till they had something.
Always wait. Yeah. And in fact, if it had been another developer's product, they would have waited. In fact, they, for many products, they wouldn't even have written a story about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe in that sense, they're becoming a technology company in that they practice vaporware and overhype products and before they even exist. You know, I mean, in my experience, having been an insider in the tech industry, is that usually when articles like this happen, somebody just had an idea. You know, that's usually what this amounts to. It's not like there's some great groundswell that they're reporting. They'd like to believe that it is, but mm-hmm. until you actually have something to ship, you don't know what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think that they were talking about the technology that was developed inside the Times got them stock in some other venture, not this one.
Uh-huh.
I think this was sounded more like something that the BetaWorks guys went to them and said, hey, we want to do news. Can we use your news? And the Times said, sure. And they said, would you like to invest? And they said, yeah, why don't we invest? And so,
well, here's the part that interested me. Michael Zimbalist, who's the vice president for R&D at the Times, somebody I've seen give presentations, said that they struck an arrangement where BetaWorks would buy a prototype of the app that was created by members of the Times company's development labs, and that same team would work with BetaWorks developers to finish it.
All right, maybe. But then there's a big stretch between that and being a tech company, because
okay.
a tech company, but this is important. This part is not, I mean, the first part, the thing that I commented on, I did tweet about that, about all of the different kinds of conflicts in there. I thought it was remarkable
mm-hmm.
and for a non-story. But that wasn't even the most interesting part of your comment, because the question it raises is, then what is a tech company?
Okay, and so what is a tech
company? A tech company is a company that wakes up in the morning and thinks about building tech products,
mm-hmm.
not how to finance an organization of reporters. And transform from a pre-internet business model to a post-internet business model for a news organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's a fundamentally different approach to things. What is it that you consider your family jewels?
Mm-hmm.
A tech company probably thinks of users as the family jewels, you know, and their ability to, you know, it depends what kind of tech company. Apple, for example, thinks about the user's wallets as their family jewels and their sort of eminent domain over those wallets, and their ability to take money out of those wallets periodically is probably what Apple considers their primary asset. Maybe
as with Microsoft and the ability to get corporate officers to keep spending on
right,
their
and
software.
Also the OEM deals that they had too,
mm-hmm.
to keep those keep the money flowing that way.
But Dave, haven't you said that news companies should become technology?
Perhaps
companies?
I've said that they should become. Maybe I said it somewhat differently. But then the question is, are they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think the Times is. If they were, then it would be somebody who you could sit down with at the company and have a technology industry conversation with,
mm-hmm.
and have it actually make some sense. And they don't have anybody there. That Michael Zimbalist is a fine human being. Sure, very good at fitting into the management structure of the New York Times, but he is not a technology industry guy. He doesn't approach the world that way.
Mm-hmm.
He can't, because the company hasn't turned that corner. If it ever is to turn that corner, it has not.
When will we know that the New York Times has become a technology company? Not to reify this too much, but...
Jay, I don't think they're going to be a technology company.
Okay.
I think that the answer is... when hell freezes over. I mean, it isn't likely to happen. Companies don't make those kinds of, you know, DNA changes, fundamental. You know, that's like going to get a gender reassignment. It doesn't happen easily. It isn't something you just slide into.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you see...
By the way, nor should the Times necessarily become a technology company.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it isn't the right thing for them to do. I kind of doubt that I said they need to become a technology company.
Well, you've sort of said that.
Yeah, but there's a difference between... See, sort of could be you heard me say that, but I didn't actually say it. You know, that happens a lot, by the way. No, really, there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
Right? That's just the way the human mind works, is that you're prepared for the ideas that you're prepared for.
Well, what you have said, Dave, is that the news companies should have been developing things like Twitter.
Yeah, and that
they should be developing the platform, the next platform for the news system.
Right, but that's...
So don't you have to become a technology company to do that?
No.
Think like one?
No, okay. I wasn't thinking that they need to become a technology company to do that, nor do I think that that would be a technology company at the end of the day.
Okay.
Nor do I necessarily think Twitter's going to be a technology company at the end of the day. See, that's probably the fundamental identity crisis that Twitter has, is that its business model leads them away from being a technology company and more towards being a media company.
Mm-hmm.
And every step that they take these days is taking them more and more into that place.
Yahoo got lost that way, too.
Yeah, I would say Yahoo got very lost. And Yahoo had some winners.
Mm-hmm.
And
they decided they were a media company.
Right, but, you know, every media company has a lot of technology inside of it. I mean, and that's not just a new, that's not something new. That's been probably since the dawn of time. I mean, you know, the old technology doesn't look like technology to you and me, but to the people of the day it did.
Right. So, absolutely.
Right.
The AP itself was more or less a way of exploiting the telegraph.
There you go. Reuters, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Reuters.
Reuters,
had, Reuters was pigeons in the beginning, I think. Yeah.
Well, speed, the history of speed and history of news are very bound up with one another.
There was a great movie starring Edward G. Robinson as Mr. Reuters, and it was pigeons. I don't know.
Pigeons, I think, are involved in Reuters. Did you happen to see, Dave, that last week Arthur Sulzberger Jr., the publisher of the New York Times, said at an industry conference that we will stop printing this newspaper at some point in...
Yeah,
he didn't say when, but, you know, some point in the future, some point in the not-too-distant future. What did you think about that? I thought that was...
Interesting comment, but obviously true.
I mean, obviously true.
Right. But I mean, it's one of those things where I'm sitting in my apartment building in Manhattan and wondering how that building's going to crumble. You know, at some point, it will happen, right? I mean, I don't think I'll be there. You know, I have other thoughts, too, like the building has been there every day of my life, you know. Even days that I was completely unaware that it was there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old building. But someday that building will come down, you know. Someday the New York Times will stop publishing print. That will probably happen in our lifetimes, I think.
Right.
In all likelihood will happen.
Well, that was the reading that I gave it, was that it's closer than one might have thought. And in the past, what Sulzberger has always said was, and this is far too facile a notion, he relied on it far too much, but the way he's put it is, the New York Times will be platform agnostic, in which he said that, you know, we don't care what device we deliver it on.
They have to not care. I mean, that, if they care, then, you know.
Right, but that included print, of course, as well as web, as well as mobile, as you know. But there's a lameness in platform agnostic, because what it suggests is that we can sort of let technology drift to the background. We don't have to think about these different forms and what they require.
Well, that would be lame. Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Where content is content, and who cares how you deliver it? And
why Sulzberger is not a very impressive dude.
That doesn't do it. That's not going to get you there.
No, the opposite. Actually, you should come into work every day excited about the opportunities that the new technology gives you to make the news even better, you know.
Forms shape content. Technologies
I'll give you an example. Because we've been dabbling around positioning for the last couple of shows, I reread the book. And it's a very easy, you know, light reading. And so there were some examples in there. And this book was written in 1981, so it's way anachronistic, you know, which is actually in itself quite interesting.
Yeah.
So one of the things that they said, well, Eastern Airlines won't work Eastern Airlines, right?
Yeah.
Why? What's the problem? Because they'll get their ass kicked by American and United, you know, and at the time TWA and Pan Am as well. They also said the New York Central Railroad should have started an airline, but they couldn't have called it New York Central. They would have had to come up with another name,
right,
another brand for it. that brand name, and then they go into great detail about the computer industry, which at the time in 1981 had just gone through a major transformation, and was unknown to them about to go through another one. The PC industry was already booted up at the time, but was not really big enough to show up on their radar. But what had just happened was there had been a transition from, you know, IBM and the Seven Dwarves. And, you know, the question was, which of the Seven Dwarves is going to catch IBM? And the answer is none of them. Mm-hmm. DEC, mm-hmm. which was a mini computer company, mm-hmm. you know, and that whole point was you need to find a new position that define a new position and, you know, not compete. You can't compete with the leader mm-hmm. head on. That was
right.
the point. You can't be the next IBM. There already is an IBM.
Right.
And that in order to get in there, you're going to have to convince everybody that you've got a completely different product. It has different capabilities. So probably that's what's going to happen here with the Times as well, is that it's going to be a fundamental redefinition of what they do that is going to either create the next New York Times or the Times will go through that transition themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, IBM...
Platform agnostic isn't going to get there.
No, IBM probably thought they were platform agnostic, mm-hmm. but they weren't. Their move, they became dominant in the PC, only to fall apart in the PC market because they did the platform agnostic thing. They were trying to recapture their dominance in the mainframe world, that they were really playing in the PC in order to win in the mainframe world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't the game. The game was no longer in the mainframe world. Microsoft did the same damn thing, you know, 10 years later when the mm-hmm. internet comes along. Now they own, you know, they're the top dog. Well, the New York Times, historically, the odds are not very good that
no.
the New York Times will actually make the transition. You know, these kinds of transitions usually kill the market leaders.
Which suggests to me that there's two ways people fumble the future. One is by resisting it. We know that one much more intimately.
No, that does not work, right? You can't
yeah.
do that.
But the other is by understanding it too early or too easily.
What's an example of that?
Well, this notion of platform agnostic, the reason why it appeals to Sulzberger did is that it sounds updated. It sounds
right.
like
yeah.
we're ready for the future because we're not clinging to
but
this.
But that's denialism, Jay. That's just like your first case. That's like saying nothing changed. That's like saying, shrugging it off and saying, really, nothing changed. We're still doing the same damn thing we were doing before.
Well, there's an element... The danger of it, and it's good that he's gone beyond that now, which is good. It's a learning curve. And I think his statement that we will stop printing a newspaper was
right.
actually a hopeful statement.
Right. There'll be a technology company when Arthur Sulzberger leaves the building.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that.
Well, Arthur Sulzberger is not going to get a brain transplant or a heart transplant or a prospective transplant.
Well, there's a lot of smart people working there.
Well, of course they have a lot of yeah. smart people there. I'm not saying anything to contradict that.
My point is that you can fumble the future by grabbing a tool to understand it or an image, a metaphor.
In total agreement that he grabbed the wrong one. He ought to be looking along the lines of the discussions that we've been having here about what new products are possible given the new technology and that they no longer have the limits of the same advertisers that they used to have. In other words, what are they? What shackles have they shed? What things no longer hold them back? And what things can they do now that they couldn't do before?
Mm-hmm.
High-value information that is worth money, that's got to be it. That just has to be it. You know?
Well...
New forms of information that you couldn't get before because the tools weren't there to actually create that information.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Or problems that you can solve that you couldn't solve before.
Same idea.
Yeah.
Basically the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And that to do that, one has to actually immerse him or herself in that technology. Immerse is not a light commitment. Immerse is the kind of commitment a fish has to the water.
Right.
You know, it's not like going to the beach and taking a swim. It's like I'm getting in there and I'm doing it. And you have to live it and you have to, that's how you get the ideas.
Can I tell you a little story? I'm a advisor, as I've said before, to a newspaper company, Journal Register Company. it's the only media company that I have an actual formal relationship with mm-hmm. as an advisor. And they took our advice and created a kind of a 20% program like Google Hands with a group of employees who wanted to push the company forward. And they had to apply to be part of this idea lab. And they got 10 hours a week, which is a quarter of their work week, off to work on projects. And they were outfitted with whatever technology they wanted so that they could be part of the mobile world, part of the iPad universe. And so we had a meeting with them about what they were going to do in their first round of projects. And their projects are all supposed to help transform their organizations. So one of the winners of the Idea Lab competition was a sports reporter in Jersey. And the project we worked out for them was, let's get 100% coverage of high school football in the region. Meaning every game, every week.
We've talked about that.
Yeah.
We?
Yeah. We talked about it in the context
of something.
Yeah, right. We talked about it in the context of a mayor's race.
Right.
So this is what he's working on is 100% of something.
I love that. That's
yeah. I love great. It too. Right. And he tried it the first week and people on staff got really excited about it.
Sure, because it's news.
Yeah,
because
news.
It's like, let's do something new.
So let's cover every single game live.
It's a moon mission.
Live,
right?
Like, let's get scores during the game and every single game in, let's say, southern New Jersey that anybody could even remotely be reached by our newspaper. And they're going to move on from that to, like, do other things. I think this is a really fun way because you have to use technology in innovative ways to get to 100%.
Totally, yeah.
You have to.
Right.
Very cool little project. All right.
By the way, I don't think the requirement that you use technology, that's putting the cart before the horse.
That wasn't a requirement.
Okay, no. I hear you. Okay, I just wanted to add that. I'm not saying that.
No, in fact, one of the things that I stressed there was, look, you can't just use these tools and say, I'm Idea Labber. That's not going to cut it at all. What you have to do is start with a problem in news coverage that you're going to solve and mm-hmm. find the appropriate tools for doing that.
It could be that you only learn the problem exists if you had the technology, but then you don't need the technology to solve the problem. It could be that just the existence, you know, certain things make you more creative, you know.
I made them start with a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to make that point.
That's it's an important point.
Yeah,
the what we wanted them to know is that what technologies they find they need, they can have. That's the principle of the Idea Lab. All right, let's move on to RSS. You just posted something at your blog.
Yeah.
With the title
Rebooting RSS.
Rebooting RSS.
Yeah.
It's related to a little scrap of news that came across our world this week, which is that Bloglines, a RSS reader company that many used many years ago, is just being shut down.
Which is more or less ratifying something that had actually happened long ago.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, acknowledging that it had no future and
And so your post, How to Reboot RSS, proposes what, Dave?
Well, let me just back up and say that this is something that I've had in mind for a long time, and I couldn't really say it without it, you know. It wasn't just Bloglines. It's also Google Reader. Those are sort of two products. And then I also spent 2 days last week with Brent Simmons, who is a former colleague of mine at Userland Software, who's gone on to become a developer of RSS tools, notably NetNewsWire, which is the leading Mac RSS tool, RSS reader. And I respect the hell out of Brent, and I enjoy talking with him, and have wanted to talk with him about this and never really had the opportunity because They all take the wrong approach, Jay. All of those products, in my opinion.
Who's the they?
Bloglines, Google Reader, NetNewsWire, NewsGator. Go down the line.
Companies building
products.
The
whole industry developed around RSS.
Yeah.
An industry that I did not participate in, and I had tried to at the onset of it. And I had friends who were VCs and was talking with them. They were pumping me for information, ideas, and then they turned around and invested in all these other companies. But then I saw their products and I go, oh, geez, this is really not good. Because their idea of RSS was wrong. I mean, they were thinking of RSS as almost like another form of electronic mail. And, they developed products that work pretty much like email readers do. So you had, a feed was analogous to an inbox, to a mailbox, and a news item was analogous to an email message. And the boxes told you how many unread items you had, and an item went from bold to not bold once you read it.
Mm-hmm.
These are all behaviors that came straight out of email.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with it is that it's not an accurate mapping. News and email are very different things. Email, there's at least an assumption that you're going to read every message. Modulo spam. Pull the spam out of the flow. And, I kind of do want to know how many messages. It is sort of relevant how many messages I have read. News, absolutely not relevant. Nor is the source of it particularly relevant either. Do I want to read all the articles from one news source in one shot? That wasn't the point of this. The point was to get all the news flowing to you and in a uniform way so that you could pick and choose which items you wanted to read and do it more or less the way you read a newspaper, which is by skimming. I don't have a clue how many New York Times articles I haven't read.
Right.
Nor would I want to know.
Right.
As I said in the piece, I don't tell you how many scripting news, that's my blog, how many scripting news articles. Can you listen to Rebooting the News, this podcast, without having listened to all the previous Rebooting News? Of course.
So let me just clarify this.
Right.
The little button you see in Google Reader giving you the number of unread items in your Google Reader account is for you a symptom of a profound misunderstanding.
Correct. What could be less relevant
of what
than
RSS
that number
is, correct?
Yeah, right, absolutely. Profound is the right word. Complete. Utter misunderstanding of what RSS is.
It's not just that it's a pain in the ass, it testifies to a wrong conception.
It is a pain in the ass, it surely is, and it's not the kind of... Software should never be a pain in the ass unless
you really... It shouldn't make you feel guilty, that's for sure.
Right, unless you actually... There's a reason for you to feel guilty. I mean, your server's down, I can't avoid telling you that. You need to know, right?
Right. Sorry, but your
that's bad
down.
News, but I have to tell you, I don't have a choice. You didn't read 32,795... blog posts from random idiots all over the world. Yeah, well, I could skip that. You don't need to know that piece of information. But it is profound and a profound misunderstanding. So now that, so there's a general agreement. First of all, most of the readers have fallen off. They're not making money and they're not even being updated. In a lot of cases, blog lines just shut down. Everybody, when people, TechCrunch had an article where they said RSS is dead, it's finally very clear what they meant. I didn't understand what they were saying because RSS is not dead. RSS is as fundamental an enabling infrastructure technology. It's like saying that water is dead because we're using a new kind of faucet. Well, water is still what's flowing through the pipe. The way the news gets to you is still RSS. It just, we're using Twitter now, we're using Facebook now instead of Google Reader and blog lines.
And explain to me when you say that RSS is the pipes, how so? I mean, I understand that in Google News, it's built on feeds.
That's how the news gets.
So that's it. That's what you mean.
There are two ways that news is delivered on the Internet. One of them is through HTML, which is reading it in a web browser, and the other is RSS. And if it's an application, if it's a piece of software that's processing the news that isn't a web browser, then it's using RSS. I mean, it really is that simple. There is no, I mean, it, or it could be a flavor of RSS. But it's, you know, you could change the names of the things in RSS. You would not have changed anything mm-hmm. by changing the names.
Okay.
I mean, you're still using it.
Yet your post is called How to Reboot RSS.
Right, because I'm accepting the premise of what people are saying. And I'm saying that let's, being particular, how could we reboot the applications market around RSS.
Okay.
I still believe there is a market that could be rebooted. It's pretty, that's what's dead, okay? I mean, obviously it's not, dead is the wrong term, but it's the one everybody's using. Google Reader is not dead. I mean, mm-hmm. Google Reader has an enviable installed base, lots of people using it. Mm-hmm. If you had that product, you'd be very happy, you mm-hmm. know? It really isn't an accurate statement, but it's the one people are making. And so I thought, here's a good moment for me to share what I believe is missing and wrong in this market. And the first part of it is the basic model of the readers. And there's a second part to it, too, which is the subscription model's always been the weak spot in RSS. And what that means is how I'm reading a website and I say, okay, this is great. I want to subscribe to this. Now the question is, how do you actually make that happen? And that has been a virtually unsolvable problem in the past because there's a need for a centralized resource that can't be centralized because the market got fragmented too soon. And, you know, that's a problem that Facebook doesn't have. It's a problem that Twitter doesn't have because they are centralized right from the get-go. And so when you want to follow somebody, you see a nice little follow button underneath
right.
them. And when you just click the button and you're following them. That's the reason why Twitter works. One of the reasons why Twitter works for news. The other is it's a river of news, plain and simple.
Right.
It doesn't tell you how many messages you haven't read, and it doesn't right. break them down into different sources. It's just all mixed together. And, yeah, you miss a lot of stuff. You miss a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And you shrug your shoulders.
It also doesn't say, who do you want to send this to?
Right. The RSS readers don't do that either. So,
true.
You know, to be fair, that's not really an advantage of Twitter.
I right.
mean, that happens in email, but that's something they haven't brought across. It all comes back around. I didn't say this in the piece, but it ultimately comes back around to the same problem that... that we've been talking about in a variety of different forms over the year and a half we've been doing this podcast, which is how to create an open federated version of these news systems so that no single company controls us. That was the thing, by the way, that RSS had that we liked.
Yeah.
It didn't have any single point of control. It had the disadvantage that comes with that, which is the anarchy.
Right.
In terms of the subscription, it's difficult. You know, always trade-offs. So you had the freedom, but you also had a little bit of anarchy there. There is a solution. You know, I got in the loop with Microsoft as they were coming into RSS. And we had a chance because I was in Seattle. We had one meeting where one of the guys who had been on my team now works at Microsoft. So we talked about a lot of that stuff that happened there. And, yeah, they didn't listen either, okay? So I got in the loop there, and I told them, look, this is the problem with RSS. Because of your market strength, you could solve this problem, but you would have to do it in a way that really didn't give you the chokehold, because nobody's going to trust you
right.
if you have that chokehold.
And
nobody's,
what did they
say? We didn't really want to hear your ideas, is what they said. We were hoping you would blanket endorse everything we were doing without actually making us listen to anything you have to say. And they didn't say it exactly like that, Jay.
Isn't this a good idea meeting? One of those, isn't this a great idea?
A series of them,
yeah,
which
yeah.
they paid the airfare to give me credit. I mean, they flew me up there. They didn't pay me a consulting fee or anything. And not that I would have done what they asked for had they paid a consulting fee. As soon as it became clear that they weren't interested in listening to anything, I cut them off. I didn't communicate any further. I mean... and it had predictably the lack of impact that I said it would. I mean, nobody was going to hook up with Microsoft, especially in 2007 or
you know,
6 or whatever, you know.
It just occurs to me, listen to this name. You know who you are?
Who am I?
Jesus. You are.
Should I hide?
You are the ombudsman of the technology industry.
Some people have said something like that. I'm not quite that, though. I would like to be a little bit more creative than that. You know?
Well,
I actually
that's
some
not
of these
all
things.
You are. I'm right. saying that you're the reason these companies never listen to you and never incorporate you into their plans or create companies around what you tell them to do is not that your ideas are wild and impractical. It's that you are representing the users.
Yeah.
As
oh,
the
thanks. That's very nice of you.
As the reader's editor does, or the public editor of the New York Times is not supposed to represent the newsroom, and he's not supposed to simply repeat the wisdom of
right.
professional journalism.
Right.
He's supposed to actually represent the readers to the New York Times. Anyway, so it's like you're the ombudsman.
Right, and I'm very flattered by that, and I'll gladly accept that. But, you know, there are business reasons at times to actually take the advice. I understand that if you're like, you know, if you've got the bull by the horns, if you're Twitter, and I come to you and say, look, it wouldn't be really cool if you opened this stuff up now and just let anybody hook in there. Kind of understand why they don't do it, right?
Right.
Because, you know, they don't have to do it. I still think it would be smart for them to do it. I've yet to see a technology company do the... actually, not true. Take it back. What I was going to say is I've not seen them actually disclaim power at a moment of strength. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's like at a moment when they don't have to disclaim the power, that
right.
it wouldn't make the slightest difference in the market if they do or they don't.
Right.
And actually, it happened this week. It was very unusual. There's two companies. There's WordPress Foundation, which is a nonprofit, and then there's Automattic, AUTOMATTIC, much less well-known brand name, which is the company that is rich. It's a hugely rich company that runs WordPress.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they just generate huge amounts of cash. They have venture capital. They've raised, you know, huge rounds of VC, not to build their business, but to buy out founders, just to buy out equity, because they just generate so much value. So what they did this week was they transferred their trademark. They owned the WordPress trademark. The company did. Automattic did. They transferred it at no cost to the foundation. They just gave away the trademark, which is one of their most valuable assets, you know, to an organization that they don't necessarily control.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of do, in a de facto way, control it.
But anything could happen in the future.
Anything could happen. Yeah. Matt Mullenweg, who's...
Why did they do this?
Because Matt Mullenweg is a visionary. Because Matt Mullenweg has balls. Because unlike most of the guys in the technology industry, he has, I think, an accurate balance to things.
Kind of like a Craigslist.
Better than Craigslist. Craigslist is now, I think, fluttering in the wind, and I think you can see where they're sort of where it was kind of ridiculous.
Oh, yeah?
Matt doesn't do that. Uh-huh. Yeah, what was ridiculous was Craig running around saying he's a tech support guy. Come on. Give me a break. That's a joke, right?
But he Customer support.
Customer support, right. Yeah. Well, he's not. And, you know, well, you laugh, right? Because, you know, he's making a joke. But
no, I don't think he is making a joke. Well, why do you say he's not?
Well, then there's their problem, Jay. Who the hell is that personality, that company, that's going to be able to stand up for it and really fight? Because eventually a company gets to a size and influence where they get lawsuits and they get whole industries going after them, the ones that they're destroying. He's been able to be Aunt Jemima, right? Sort of like the symbol of friendliness. You know, or the state, or whatever.
I don't think it's an act.
No, I didn't say it was.
Okay.
Although I do think it is.
Okay.
I want to walk that very, very fine line there. I don't think he says it's an act, but I do think it is. I think he's a lot smarter than he lets on.
Oh, wait a second. What does it have to do with smarter?
He's really a nice guy, is what you're saying.
I'm saying that he doesn't want to actually run the company.
Well, he can't have
he
it both ways.
He wants CEO Jim Buckmaster to run the company.
Yeah, unfortunately, the company's not named Jim's List.
Yeah. Right.
If it were named Jim's List or, you know, something else, you know, he could get away with it. There's a difference. Okay, maybe I haven't nailed it. But there's a difference between what Matt Mullenweg is doing and what Craig is doing.
Okay.
Matt's going to get his face dirty. He's going to get his hands dirtied. He's going to get into some fights. You know, he's got a fight coming with these Tumblr guys, okay? That's for sure coming, right? He's going to be in a fight with Twitter at some point. That's going to happen, too. You know, this world doesn't stay, these guys don't stay separated forever. Mm-hmm. Eventually, what he's doing is getting ready for it. And he's young. They're all kind of young, right?
Yep.
And he's young, he's rich, and he hasn't learned some things because he hasn't had to fight some kinds of fights. I can see that in him. But yet, he's willing to try an idea out. I really appreciate that.
Let me ask you something that's related to this. When I talk to people starting news companies, people at legacy news companies, people running local news sites, one of the things you always ask them is, what is your back end? What content management system are you using? And it's remarkable, but there's still no good answer to that. There's no killer system. There's no solution. Many sites are still using custom-built CMSs.
Really?
That evolved over time that nobody else could possibly understand. Huh. And that, you know, it's not like.
And why do you think that is? Because
I'm asking you, why don't we have a killer app, as it were? Why don't we have a standard solution? Why hasn't this problem been solved?
Well, it has been solved. I mean, with all possible humility, the first project that I did was a CMS, a web CMS. I can tell you there wasn't a whole lot of demand for it. The problem is that there's a lot of lock-in. These companies... So where did you say you're seeing this? You're seeing this...
Constantly.
Where? At the news organizations,
yes.
Right? Yeah, well, I think...
But even new ones, born on the web ones.
So they build their own, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Really? Well, I don't know the answer. I mean, if they're building their own, I don't know the answer. I mean, the answer was in the 90s when I was active in that business. Because we called blogging tools, before they were called blogging tools, they were called content management systems.
Yeah, a blogging system is
a content management system. But they were much more full-featured than blogging tools are. Uh-huh. Blogging was a narrowing of the functionality of the CMS to get you higher ease of use. I still have a CMS. We could try, you know, marketing it, see what happens. You want to do that? I mean, marketing it in quotes, right? Not actually put a price on it.
Right.
But let's just see what happens. It's all GPL'd. It's all totally open source. So there's nothing in the way there.
I'm just wondering what the explanation is.
I don't know. But
maybe our readers know. Maybe our listeners know.
I think I was going to say in a lot of cases the cost of conversion is huge. When you
but
have
that
the process,
wouldn't explain it
the
new
for
ones.
New
sites. Yeah.
Well, it might, because there's also the human brain. The human beings come from organizations where they have experience using the legacy systems.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the word legacy, but you know, that's what we're, you know. I don't know. It's a good question.
All right. Later today, the Local East Village is launching. Not sure exactly when. Maybe we'll be able to tell.
What's the URL?
The URL is localeastvillage.com.
It's a lot of letters. A lot of characters.
Yes, but it's better than the New York Times URL, which is eastvillage.thelocal.nytimes.com. And we'll be able to talk about it next week. And the virtual assignment desk, which is Studio 20's first software product, will also be kind of debuted today. There'll be a post up on my blog today at PressThink explaining what the virtual assignment desk is and why.
All this will be pointed to from rebootnews.com.
Yes, and all this will be pointed to. And next week we can sort of see what the initial reaction was to both these things. The East Village Local is going to take some time. It's not going to be great right out of the box, but I still think it's a really exciting thing for a journalism school to be doing.
Sure.
And
why won't it be great out of the box?
I just think it takes time and it takes the pressure of publication to really get people working.
Well, greatness can be sort of in the eye of the beholder, too, right? I mean, it can start off being great even if, you know, if it isn't, like, the most complete website. It still can be beautiful.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it will look good. It'll look
I'll be
fine.
Clicking that link as soon as you guys bring it live.
All right.
What's the first article going to be, Jay?
I don't know because I'm not the editor.
Oh, okay.
And I have not
Well, that'll be
tried
the interesting one.
That.
Who gets to write that and what will it be? It probably should be just like a Hello World, you know, that kind of thing.
Or
how
just
about
news.
Test Post? How about, oh,
just news.
10 seconds.
Right. So we're out of time now. So we'll see you again next week, Ray.
All right. Great show.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.